What should you be looking for in exchange for Latavius Murray right now? Who is Jamal Charles' handcuff? And how did you do in your latest FFPC Dynasty trade? We've got a great show for you. Dynasty Trade Calculator co-founder and Dynasty League Football's Izzy Elkafis is here. I'm Eric Balkman. Stick around. Your special Eric Balkman Show episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour starts now.
Live from the WRST radio studios in beautiful Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and heard around the world on the WRST stream, it's the Eric Balkman Show.
Greetings, salutations to all the Balkaholics listening in tonight. Welcome to this special April 1st Eric Balkman episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com. I'm your slightly above average host, Eric Balkman. My co-host, the Dizzle, Dave Gerzak, is actually off this week, so I want to bring in tonight's co-host. Sitting in for him is the co-founder of DynastyTradeCalculator.com and regular contributor to DynastyLeagueFootball.com. You can also catch him when he co-hosts the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast with John Paul Hurley. I encourage you to follow him on Twitter at DLF_IZZE. That's DLF_IZZYE. And welcome, the Pharaoh of Fantasy, Izzy Elkafis, into the show tonight. Izzy, thanks for co-hosting, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Coming up on tonight's show, Izzy and I are going to debate whether a bounce-back year is in the cards for Carlos Hyde. We'll talk about how big of an impact Clive Walford is going to have in FFPC leagues in 2016. And we'll analyze some real-life FFPC dynasty trades that you all made this past week. Tonight, before we put a proverbial bow on Season 4 of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour podcast, shout out to the chat room right now. Feel free to post any questions you might have in there. If you want to connect with us on Twitter, you can do so at HSFFHour, at Eric Balkman, or with Izzy at DLF_IZZE. You can post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. If you want to give us a call and talk with us tonight, 347-426-3682. That's 347-GAME-OVA. You can also email the show at the inbox at highstakesfantasyfootball@gmail.com. If you have any questions for me or for Izzy or for the show, now's the time to send them in. Our producer and mutual friend Rob, as well as our audio engineer Bryce, will get those questions to us in the show tonight. We'll do our best to get to all of them, but we do have a lot of dynasty trades I want to get Izzy's opinion on. So that is all coming up later on in the show. Before we get to the show tonight, I want to remind everybody to contact your local reps to have a sit-down meeting with them. Tell them that you don't want to play in a fantasy football duopoly. You want to continue to play season-long high-stakes fantasy football. You want to continue to play dynasty high-stakes fantasy football. And remember to set up a profile at sbfsta.org. That's the Small Businesses of Fantasy Sports Trade Association website. We'll keep you posted on all the lobbying and all the legislative bills that are going on around the country there. And we certainly need your support. We've done a lot so far. But we do need a lot of financial support in order to keep this going to make sure that fantasy football can be enjoyed by everybody across the nation year-round. Also, a reminder to register for the Football Guys Players Championship before June 5th. That is our early bird special. Make sure you take advantage of that make sure you take advantage of that so you can enjoy the benefits of that extended subscription with Football Guys. Our Draft Experts main event signups are live right now. You can register for those if you are making plans to draft with us in Vegas in September. And remember, register for Dynasty Startups. There's we have some on the website right now. I believe we have a couple of orphan teams left as well at myffpc.com. And very excited to bring those to you as well. And if you're unsure about jumping into Dynasty, if you're unsure about what it takes to run a Dynasty team, well, we have the perfect co-host tonight because Izzy's going to drop some knowledge on us, give us a lot of stuff to think about, and really make us better Dynasty players. And Izzy, I hope I'm not putting too much pressure on you by saying that, but I'll be completely honest with you at the top of the show. The fact that you're already on, the fact that you are speaking coherently, you're already a massive upgrade on my normal co-host, Dave Gerzak.
Well, that's kind words, so it sounds like the bar is pretty low, so I should be able to jump right over that.
Yeah, I would say that you've already jumped over it. Now you're just raising the bar for future guests and co-hosts. Izzy, tell us a little bit about what you do for Dynasty League Football, and tell us a little bit how you launched Dynasty Trade Calculator.
Yeah, so I'll start with the Dynasty Trade Calculator because that's kind of what started first. So my co-host at the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast, John Hurley, and I, we started Dynasty Trade Calculator as a website. Actually, it was just a calculator to begin with. And we were always arguing about player values and how to determine what team wins the side of a trade when you have multiple assets. You know, you have three pieces on one side, four pieces on another, and it's really hard to break it down when you're looking at it on a piece of paper. But when you put it into a calculator, if you have values of these players assigned based on, you know, an algorithm that we came up with, it's easier to figure out, okay, who won a trade, who would win a trade if the trade was executed. So we spent a couple of months going back and forth on trying to what we call perfect. I mean, you can't ever perfect anything because there's just so much that goes into it, variables that you can't control, like human nature. But what we did was we started with the calculator and took that to what we felt was, you know, an elite level. And things just kind of snowballed from there. The website picked up, traffic picked up, people were interested in writing for us. And we've only been around for maybe 9 months, and traffic is great, and we started up a podcast, and we've gotten nothing but great reviews. So that's kind of how it started. And then DLF kind of came around the same time as at the infancy of our DTC website. I've always been told by people I should write for fantasy football or dynasty football, and I gave it a shot. They had an opening or had a couple openings, gave it a shot, and I've written a few articles for them, and I'm always part of their you know, their mock drafts, their DLF mock drafts with the staff mocks, and we kind of do a little write-ups. So that's what I've done so far for DLF, and hopefully some great things to come. I guess some stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah, very cool stuff that you do on Twitter too. You put up the Twitter polls, but really taking like the wisdom of the crowd's mock draft, like for rookie dynasty startups, and just kind of gave several choices on a pick by pick basis. And I think you made it through all the way through two rounds to sort of have like what the public is really thinking right now as far as how they would rank the rookies. That was all on Twitter. That had to be kind of an interesting exercise to execute.
Yeah, and with ADP, it's always interesting because it just takes one person to take, you know, a player in a certain spot. But if you do it this way, and I was thinking, okay, well, what if we polled an entire, you know, audience of guys and we took the average, you know, whoever won, and I wanted to see what difference it would make. And it really didn't make too much of a difference at the top of the draft. It made more of a difference in the, you know, late first round to second round range. That's when I started to notice, okay, there are some guys that maybe the hype, just one or two guys really like a player versus the community. So that's kind of what I wanted to set out to do. And I'm going to do a post NFL draft to see how landing spots affect people's values and then maybe write an article about it.
Oh, I'd be definitely interested in checking that out because I think that there's three measures of how every player in the NFL is sort of gauged. You know, there's how you feel about a player, what the public perception and your fellow owner's perception is about his value, and then the actual value. And we obviously know how we feel about a certain player. We kind of get a feel how the public knows, but the real value we don't know until they get out on the field. So I think that, you know, trying to capture the public perception and what your fellow dynasty owners, how strong their beliefs are in a certain player is always most compelling and really leads to the success of the best dynasty players. So that article will be definitely a must read by you after the NFL draft. Let's talk a little bit and apply some of your dynasty knowledge to some actual players. The first guy I want to lead off with is Dorial Green Beckham. He has been a guy with many of the FFPC players who expect him to take a significant step forward this year. Obviously, he was a physical specimen coming into Tennessee last year. He had the year off from football, so you kind of had to know that he wasn't going to go Beckham on the league last year. But DGB, coming into his second year, are you buying that he's going to have a big season this year? Does he take that step? What's your opinion on Dorial Green Beckham for 2016?
Yeah, he's very polarizing. You either really like him or you don't. And for me, I'm not a huge fan. So I've always said this on our DTC podcast. I'm a big fan of value. So when I say I don't like a player, it's typically because I don't like their value. They're all NFL players. It's whether or not I feel that they're undervalued or overvalued. With DGB, I feel like he's overvalued. And the end of his season, where he had two big games, once against Jacksonville, where he had 119 and a touchdown, and then he had, you know, six catches for 113 against New England. He ended the season well, and it seems like another guy like Devontae Parker, where if you end the season well, that's what resonates with you know, dynasty folks and fans, football players in general. What I don't like is the fact that even if he takes the next step as a football player, he's being overvalued in the dynasty community, and he's being drafted in the third round of dynasty leagues and startups. And he has now Rishard Matthews there. He's got Kendall Wright there. He's got Delanie Walker there. They signed DeMarco Murray, and DeMarco Murray's, you know, adept at pass catching. There's going to be a lot of mouths to feed in that offense, and the amount of investment that you have to make into a guy like Dorial Green Beckham, it's just a little worrisome, not to mention that he's still a little bit raw. He still needs to work on his route running. And he doesn't play – he's 6'5", but he does not play 6'5". And I think a lot of that has to do with his – you know, he's got shorter arm length than most guys, and he's got smaller hands. And he moves fluidly, and that's what people like about him. But his arm length is typical for a guy that's maybe 6'2". If you look at last year's draft, like guys like Devontae Parker have – bigger, longer arms and 2 inches shorter, Kevin White, and then you know, a guy like Nelson Agholor, who's 6 feet, has pretty much the same arm length. So he doesn't have that same catch radius. He doesn't play as big as his size. And in Dynasty, everybody gets enamored with the big, tall, physical receivers, and they always turn out to be a premium in terms of the price that you have to pay. So that's why I'm not a huge fan of him. I just think he's overinflated in terms of cost.
Totally agree with you there, too. The other thing that I always bring into question, and granted, you, when you're talking about dynasty, you want to have the long-term picture in mind, but I think in the short term, I'm just – that coaching staff in Tennessee, it's hard for me to put faith – outside of Delanie Walker maybe, it's tough for me to put any kind of faith in significant faith in a lot of those skill position players in Tennessee. That's the other thing that worries me about Beckham. Izzy, when you look at the top running back in this year's rookie class, it's by and large Ezekiel Elliott. By most publications, most pundits out there would say he's head and shoulders above everyone else. When you compare Ezekiel Elliott's talent that you've seen from him at the collegiate level, how does he compare to Todd Gurley from last year? Are we talking about two guys who are on the same tier as far as talent wise? Or is Elliott, you know, does he have a portion of that value, but is he a tier lower than what Gurley was last season?
Yeah, and I think Gurley's a much better football player just because I feel like Gurley can be transcendent. I think he can be the next best running back, where Ezekiel Elliott is, he's really good at everything. And he's good at a lot of the intangibles. And that's what has kind of boosted his NFL draft stock and in turn has helped his dynasty draft stock. The fact that Zeke can do everything means that he can be on the field at all times, just like Gurley can be. But the difference is I feel like he lacks the upside that a Todd Gurley does. I think Todd Gurley can have, you know, he could be the best running back in football for the next 4 or 5 years. He's got that type of talent where Zeke, he's probably going to be, you know, the – I'm trying to think of a relative player that you can say, okay, this is the type of guy that Zeke can be. Look at a guy like Matt Forte, where Matt Forte was never the best running back in football, but he was always really good. That's what I think Zeke can be, where I think Todd Gurley can be the APs, the Marshawn Lynches, the guys that are elite, and everybody across the board values him as the number one running back asset. And another thing, too, with Zeke, it's, we still don't know where he's going to end up in the draft, and that has a lot to do with kind of the value. So if we're looking at it from value and the price that somebody's going to pay to acquire a guy like Zeke versus Gurley, there's a difference between that and a difference between talent. The talent is evident for me that Gurley's much better, but Gurley's stuck in a situation where he's got no quarterback, no receivers, no tight end, no offensive line, very dysfunctional offense in a whole. So he's literally in the least desirable situation out there. And Zeke can go to a very desirable situation and really kind of change his landscape and Gurley's landscape as a top running back if Zeke comes in and has a really good season. But talent-wise, Gurley's far and ahead, in my opinion.
Talking with Izzy Elkafis, the co-founder of DynastyTradeCalculator.com, co-host of the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast, contributor to Dynasty League Football as well. On the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour tonight, Izzy, Latavius Murray's been in the news. He obviously had a breakout season last year, but Jack Del Rio and the Oakland coaches, they're saying that they want to get him help in the backfield. They want to get another guy back up there. Are you actively, if I don't even know if you own him in any of your dynasty leagues, but if you did, would you be actively trying to move him based on that, knowing that those reports coming out of Oakland? And if you are trying to move him, what sort of rookie draft pick would you take back for him at this point?
Yeah, so I just did move him not too long ago for it was probably about a month ago I traded him for Greg Olsen, who I'm a huge fan of Greg Olsen. And a lot of it has to do with the worry that somebody's going to come in and take a lot of his reps. When your coach comes out and publicly says, we're trying to find competition, we're trying to decrease his workload, so on and so forth, that's worrisome. The one thing Latavius Murray has in his favor is they going into 2016, they might have the best offensive line in football. So that's gonna mask a lot of his struggles. And despite having a pretty decent offensive line last year, pretty good offensive line actually, he didn't take the step that everybody was expecting him to. He's a big size, speed freak that everybody likes, but he was pretty pedestrian in his performances. So you're kind of stuck in the middle of, do you pay for a guy because he's got a really good offensive line? Or like kind of like a Darren McFadden, everybody purchased Darren McFadden because he was playing in Dallas. And, you know, Joseph Randall smoked his way out of the league, or stole his way out of the league, I guess. you know, do you do that with Latavius Murray? Do you put the investment in Latavius Murray and hope, even if a guy comes in and takes some of his reps, can he still be functional and valuable? And I just don't want to take the risk, especially with running backs, how easy it is for them to lose their jobs. You know, and he's always kind of been nicked up as well. I think he's a sell, and I'm almost certain they're going to address the position early in the draft, in the first few rounds, is my guess. So if I'm selling Latavius Murray, like I said, a guy like Greg Olsen I would take, but I would say he's probably worth right now, I'd probably sell him for the 107, 108 pretty comfortably, maybe 106 to 107. And if I'm buying him, I probably wouldn't spend more than a late first round pick on him. Probably a second round pick is where I'd feel comfortable taking him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't own Murray in any of my leagues right now, but if I did, if I was looking to acquire him, if I needed a running back in that league and I had a high second round pick, I'd be fine taking him on, because it's not like, you know, it's not like, unless they draft somebody like Elliott, which I can't see them doing, it's not like if they draft a running back, Latavius Murray becomes irrelevant. I mean, he will lose his value for sure, that, you know, that what he has right now. But I think that you have to keep in mind that even if they bring somebody else in, Murray is still going to be a big-time contributor in that Oakland backfield this year. I'm hoping, Izzy, as we talk about another running back, I'm hoping that this guy also has a big-time running back, big-time impact from the running back position in Dynasty, given I own him in my favorite Dynasty League, and I'm counting on big things from Carlos Hyde, or I'm hoping for big things from Carlos Hyde. I don't want to say I'm counting on it anymore, but Chip Kelly is the new head coach for the San Francisco 49ers. Do you expect a big year for Carlos Hyde running behind Chip Kelly's offensive line?
You know, it's interesting because we don't know who else is going to join him in the backfield, legitimately join him in the backfield. He's going to have somebody because Chip Kelly uses multiple backs. He's done it always. He's always done it. Hyde worries me because I'm not a huge fan of Hyde coming. I wasn't a huge fan of Hyde coming into the NFL. I didn't think that athletically he doesn't really stand up to the elite players, even the really good players. And he's not a guy that's going to make you miss in space. So I worry about him. I don't know why everybody's really excited about Carlos Hyde. You know, he can do the things that you need him to do on a football field, but he's a solid pass blocker. He can catch the ball well, so he fits that mold for Chip Kelly. But I don't think that he has the that upside that you would want to invest in a guy like Carlos Hyde. He doesn't have the with running backs. You need those guys to have the talent and the elite upside to say these guys can sustain their value like a Jamal Charles and Marshawn Lynch for 5-6 years in the backfield, where Carlos Hyde, I don't feel, has that. So whenever there's a guy like that on my roster, I always try to move him because his window is small and he can always get replaced. So not only that, but like I said, they're going to bring somebody in, and I think Hyde is still going to be the 1A to somebody's 1B, but I would be looking to move him very early into the season because he will have those few good games. And you got to capitalize on a guy like Carlos Hyde. So that's kind of my take on him. But once again, Carlos Hyde is extremely polarizing. There's a lot of guys that really like Carlos Hyde, and there's guys that really dislike him. I'm more on the dislike fence.
Question from the chat room is the House of Cards. Actually, Biplab Mandel, next week's guest on the show, he wants to know who you like better, Carlos Hyde or Eddie Lacy, the newly slimmed down Eddie Lacy going into 2016 for Dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah, got rid of the China food, picked up the P90X. I probably prefer Lacy. Actually, more than probably, I do prefer Lacy. Just because if he can stay slim, he's a better running back than Carlos Hyde. And the offense is it's set up beautifully with Aaron Rodgers there. It just takes so much pressure. They can't stack the box, and that's where Lacy can thrive. Where he can bust through arm tackles, and if he gets to the second level full head of steam, he can do some damage. It takes multiple guys to bring him down, and when you don't have a stacked box, it's hard for guys to bring him down, and it's easy for him to succeed, whereas Carlos Hyde doesn't have that that luxury. So I side with Lacy. I know everybody's kind of worried about Lacy, but, whenever guys are heavily invested in rookie drafts and whenever teams kind of really put all their eggs into a basket. It seemed like they've put a lot of their eggs into Lacy in terms of their efforts every year to make him really good. And the fact that he should have lost more carries to James Starks last season and he didn't just shows how much commitment they have to him. So I side with Lacy pretty comfortably versus Carlos Hyde.
Let me follow that up, Izzy, because I have Carlos Hyde on that league I was telling you about, and part of the reason I went out and traded for Eddie Lacy last year is because of my worry of Carlos Hyde. So I have Lacy on that team, and I'm the big I'm in Packers country here in Northeast Wisconsin, so I obviously love my Packers, but I've been the biggest fan of Eddie Lacy even when he was struggling last year when he was overweight. I mean, that's the time I traded for him because I knew he would be better. I knew his value probably wasn't going to get any lower, and I knew he would bounce back. Now here's my concern. So you look at Le'Veon Bell and who is the other one that slimmed down? Was it Marshawn Lynch? There's another big running back that slimmed down and had a big time season after the weight loss. My concern is while Lacy did that, I don't know if his running style and the way he plays football is similar to like Le'Veon Bell, where the weight loss will have that type of impact on him. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like part of Lacy's part of what makes him so good is his ability to run over people and carry tacklers. And I'm not debating that he's lost some fat, but I wonder, did he lose some of that bruising muscle as well? Is he going to be as powerful as a running back as he was in his prime, early in his career? And how does this weight loss translate for his style on the field? Or am I just overanalyzing it?
Yeah, so I think it really depends on where his weight was. He looked like he was probably pushing 250 last year, probably mid-250s. He did not look like the 230 that he was when he came into the NFL. So if he's down to the 230, do you remember what his actual weight is now? He was in the 220s, right, after P90X?
I never saw the weight reported, but I know that he was, I mean, he has to be, I mean, there's no way he looked 230 pounds in that picture. So, I mean, he's got to be sub 230.
Yeah. So I'm guessing they're probably going to get him down, you know, to a weight that they like, and then they're going to, you know, he's probably going to hit the weight room and build back up to what a healthy 230 with muscle. Now, if he gets to about 225, 230, I'm not worried about that, because that's still a big running back. So I'm comfortable with him at 225, 230 is still that bruising running back. And like I mentioned, when you don't have a stacked box, you don't really need to make that many guys miss tackles. you just need a couple, right? But if you have a stacked box, then that changes the game for him. So the 250, I mean, the extra fat that he's got on it probably feels better on the defenders than 230 of muscle, because, you know, fat's kind of soft. I wouldn't mind tackling a heavy set guy as opposed to a guy that's slimmer but has muscle, you know?
So yeah, that's true.
Maybe this isn't necessarily a bad thing. So I think 230, if he's at 230 starting the season, I'm ecstatic about that.
From veteran running backs, let's move on and talk about rookie receivers. One of the more interesting ones, and we haven't really touched on him too much on the show, is Lerante Carew from Rutgers. What can you say about him that should actually make dynasty owners think about putting him among pre-draft, of course, but among the top of this year's wide receiver class?
Yeah, so I really like Carew's game. What worries me is the off-the-field issues, but people are starting to catch on to him. So he's my third wide receiver right now. I worry about Carew's upside, his full upside, but I really like the player that he can develop into immediately. I think he's pretty polished. I mean, he could use a little bit of help in his routes, and I think it's more physical than it is just kind of technique. I just think that he's not as athletic and fluid as a lot of the other guys. But I like his game, and I think he's you watch him play, and he looks like he wants it. You know, he wants to be great. He wants to be successful, and he's that go get it type of guy. So if Carew is going up for a ball, I'm confident that Carew's going to go get it because he wants it. And a lot of guys didn't know Leonte Carew, you know, coming into this season, and now he's starting to become a household name because, you know, folks on Twitter and, you know, there's some people now starting to pump him up, and he's starting to get taken as a, you know, fourth or fifth wide receiver. I don't think he's gotten up to the three yet. He'd be a really good wide receiver too, for his career. I don't think he can be that, you know, that prototypical, you know, top end wide receiver, but I think he can make a really good wide receiver on the opposite end benefit from having a guy like Carew, because it just takes pressure off of everybody. And I think Carew could do a really good job at that secondary option.
You know, Izzy, to that end, to me, we've been spoiled as dynasty owners the last couple of years with how good the receivers have been, especially 2 years ago, where it was just, I mean, insane how good and how deep that class was. As you look at this year's rookie class, to me, I mean, your analysis of Carew said it. I mean, he's good. He could be a good number two. I feel like there's a lot of complementary pieces, guys who have the upside to be good complementary pieces in this draft, maybe outside of Ezekiel Elliott or Laquon Treadwell would probably be the two exceptions right now, or maybe even them, you know, they wouldn't even be exceptions. But as you look at this rookie class as a whole, to me, it doesn't get me as excited as I was as a dynasty owner for 2014 and 2015 rookie drafts. Are you sharing that sentiment?
Yeah, I have. And that's kind of what the sentiment was going into, you know, this offseason. At the end of 2015, people weren't really that excited about the 2016 rookies. And then what's happened recently is, you know, the combine comes around, pro days come around, they see these guys in shorts and, you know, the underwear Olympics, and now everybody's excited. And now all these guys are going back and watching film, and they're turning into favorite players. Like, oh, now, you know, Torrey Holmes is my favorite player. Look how fast he is. Look how good he looks in that uniform. Whatever the case may be. For me, I still don't like this class, and I don't like it at all. I look at first-round picks, and I'm looking at these guys, and I'm saying to myself, like, Boyd is not going to be a primary option. Carew probably will not be a primary option. Corey Coleman probably won't be a primary. Same thing with Sterling Shepard. And all these guys are being drafted in the first round. And if you look at the running backs, outside of Zeke, Henry, and I think Booker, I really like Booker, I don't think any of the other guys can really be solid, you know, RB1s at the next level. So I'm having to invest a first-round pick, and that first-round pick doesn't have the same weight as, like you mentioned, it did in 2014 and 2015. So I'm losing value there. I'd much rather trade 2016 first for established players with the same sort of upside that are already there. So that's kind of my take on it. I completely agree. This draft class is not that elite. I think Doxson has made the jump from, you know, the second tier to the top tier, and he's kind of jostling with Treadwell. And their landing spots will determine who's higher, Doxson or Treadwell. For me, I still prefer Treadwell as a player. I think he's much better, and Doxson thrive playing against weaker competition. So take Doxson's performances with a grain of salt. I think Treadwell just had he was dealt a tougher hand, and I thought he played exceptionally well.
DynastyTradeCalculator.com co-founder Izzy Okafis is tonight's guest on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. I'm Eric Balkman. And let's bring up, Izzy, another receiver that I've already said on this show I'm not a huge fan of, and to me, it always surprises me when I see his name mentioned at the top of this year's rookie wide receiver class, and that's Michael Thomas. Do you think that people are overrating him, are overvaluing him right now? What's sort of your take, maybe not necessarily on his rookie season, but when you take a look at your prognostication for how his career will be, what type of NFL player do you think he's going to be?
I don't think he's going to be a very good one at all. It's hard for people to say, I think this guy is going to be a bust, just because we just don't know. But if I'm betting on the first round busts, or potential guys that are going to be drafted in the first round that are going to bust, he's my pick. I'm not a fan of Michael Thomas's game. I don't think he's a natural wide receiver. He looks like he's always fighting himself. Like, he doesn't look, he's just not smooth. He doesn't play the game well. It feels like he just started playing the receiver position. Let's put it that way. And he hasn't. You look at a guy like Nelson Aguilar last year, he played wide receiver starting in college. And he was not a wide receiver in high school. And you watch him play and you're like, that's a fluid athlete. It looks like he's been playing the wide receiver position for a while. I don't get that same feeling for Michael Thomas. I just feel like he looks lost. He doesn't look comfortable. And I don't want to put that type of investment in a guy like that. I saw his gauntlet and I tweeted it out. I vined it and I tweeted it out. I could run a better gauntlet. I would put any amount of money on it that anybody wants to bet. I mean, he wasn't even staying in the gauntlet. If you're not familiar with it, you're supposed to run the line and you're supposed to catch passes, obviously, and you're supposed to show that you have balance and you have to be able to turn up field and finish your run. Well, he starts with the gauntlet, and he is all over the board. It looks like he'd fail a sobriety test, like, big time. And he was just all over the board. He dropped the pass and then caught the last pass and just slipped because he's off balance the entire time. He's just not that natural guy where you look at a guy like Sherron Peake, who nobody has anywhere on their radar. He's probably like a fourth-round dynasty pick, but he runs that gauntlet so comfortably. It just worries me. His whole game worries me, and people just get enamored with the height, weight, speed that Michael Thomas possesses. But I'm not buying whatsoever. And I think he really needs a lot of work on his route running and selling his routes. And I don't know where people are getting this he's a good route runner idea from, because I don't think he's good at route running at all. I think he needs major improvement. So that's my take on him, and it sounds like you have the same issues.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Izzy, when just hearing you talk about him right now made me think of a player from a couple of years ago that I remember hearing the same stuff about, and that's Kenny Britt. You heard the pre-draft analysis on Kenny Britt as far as how good of a dynasty receiver would be. And here's what I remember hearing. Not a great route runner, decent size, fights the ball, has problems with drops. I'm hearing a lot of the same stuff about Michael Thomas. What do you think about the comp between those two guys?
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a bad comp at all. It's kind of similar guy who I've always compared Michael Thomas to, and they're kind of in the same mold, is Brandon LaFell. Just a guy that isn't natural. He looks like he should be able to do all the things that you need a wide receiver to do, but he's just not all there. Just something's always missing, and I think all three of those guys are falling into the same boat. I like Kenny Britt a little bit more than I do Michael Thomas, and I thought he just had – if Kenny Britt puts this together, I think he's just more of a natural wide receiver, but he was a little rough around the edges for sure. I can totally see the connection there. But I thought Britt, in the right situation, could develop into a pretty good player. But he's just always hurt, and he had just a horrible quarterback play and so on and so forth. But I definitely see the connection, and I think all three of those guys are very similar in terms of the type of player they are.
Let me talk to you a little bit about, because we've talked about so many first-round rookie picks and maybe second-round pick, not rookie picks, but first-round NFL picks. Let's talk a little bit about some of the under-the-radar guys, guys that not a lot of people are talking about right now, guys that you think might make excellent picks in your rookie draft at the turn, at the end of the first round, or maybe in the second round, guys that not a lot of people are talking about right now. Who are some of your favorites from this year's class, Izzy?
Yeah, my favorite that's not getting any love is Devontae Booker. Like I said, he's my third rated running back. It's basically 2A, 2B, waiting to see where Henry falls or his landing spot. I love Devontae Booker, and he's out of the first round, and I'm not 100% sure why. Maybe it was the knee injury at the end of the season. It's kind of the same dynamic. He got hurt at the end of the season, so we didn't really get to see him at in December and into his bowl game, and we didn't see him at the combine, didn't see him, his pro day, where he's, going to be participating. But I like his game. I think he's a three-down back. He's one of the few three-down backs. Besides Zeke, he's the closest to I wouldn't say guaranteed three-down back, but I know that he can play all three downs. Good in pass protection, catches the ball naturally, runs in between the tackles, is strong, finishes runs. Isn't the most elusive guy, but can definitely make you miss. I love Devontae Booker. If you can get him in your second round, that's an absolute steal. Guys like C.J. Procise are going ahead of him, which I don't understand. C.J. Procise is extremely raw. He could develop into that guy, but he needs to work on some of the natural instincts of the running back position, the intangibles, vision, technique, so on and so forth. So Devontae Booker is like my primary target late in first rounds, early in second rounds. And the other guy that I really like is Tajae Sharpe, especially where he's being drafted. I like Tajae Sharpe, but once again, he's another guy that won't be a wide receiver one, but he could be a nice wide receiver two for a team. Catches the ball really well, runs phenomenal routes, is tall. And those are the guys that succeed. Guys that are bigger than their corners, sell their routes well, and catch the ball well. I mean, what else do you want from a guy? It's just he lacks the elite upside based on athleticism and just maybe the strength. He's kind of wired. He's going to need to put on, a little bit more weight and just be a little bit more aggressive. And the last guy is probably Jonathan Williams because, once again, outside of Zeke, Devontae Booker, he's got an outside chance of being a three-down back. He's a much better running back, in my opinion, than Alex Collins. But he got hurt. And he missed all of 2015, and he's kind of been forgotten man. He's kind of been the forgotten man of this draft. So if you can get him in the late second round, I think he'll slowly creep up in drafts, but he's a huge target for me late in second round picks. And if you're looking really, really deep, I'm kind of partial to like a fourth round pick like Sherrone Peak. I think he has the potential to be pretty good. He definitely needs some refinement. But he's 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", probably 220 pounds. He looks the part. He's smooth. And he's a nice developmental player. It might take him a few years, but he can definitely be a good player down the road. So those are my probably top four after the first round guys on the board.
I'm making notes of this right now because I have some second round picks this year that I'm going to be researching shortly. So Booker, Sharp, Peak, and Jonathan Williams, you said?
Yep. And quick guy in here for you guys, Josh Ferguson. I absolutely love in terms of his value. I think he's kind of like a hybrid in between like a CJ Spiller and a Theo Riddick, where he's just extremely explosive. He won't be like a three-down back. He's not going to be your first and second-down guy. But in today's NFL, he can definitely steal some carries. He can be like that theoretic guy where he steals a few carries, DJ Spiller stealing a few carries, and is really good catching the ball. You can line him up at wide receiver. He can be a really nice gadget guy too. So Josh Ferguson, I think he's going like 46th, 47th in DLF's rookie mocks. Love Josh Ferguson at that value. I think that's an absolute steal, and he'll see the field in the NFL. It just depends on how good he's going to be and how utilized he's going to be at the next level, but he's definitely going to be an asset for an NFL team.
Well, Izzy, we had an email here from Jason in Providence, Rhode Island, but I'm going to skip it because he was asking about Devontae Booker. You already talked about him, so I think that answered Jason's question. So we'll move on to Andy in Jacksonville, Florida. He writes, with Stevon Ridley signing in Detroit, are you looking to get rid of Ameer Abdullah because of the hit to his usage, or is the perceived value actually much bigger and Abdullah should be had on the cheap? Thanks, Izzy. That's Andy in Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks for the email, Andy. Which way are you going with Abdullah right now, Izzy, with the Ridley signing? Is he a buy? Is he a hold? Is he a sell? Which way are you leaning?
Yeah, you know, he's kind of been forgotten. People are kind of ignoring him. I think this is more of a worry for the Zach Venner owners than it is for the Ameer Abdullah owners. I think Ameer is being pretty undervalued. He has some growing pains. It looks like the Detroit's kind of backing him. Sounds like they're pretty excited about his second year. I'm buying him. Whenever a guy gets drafted pretty highly, and if you remember, he kind of exploded onto the scene, and everybody was like, Ameer Abdullah, he's the next guy. And then he tailed off, and now nobody wants him. They leave him for dead. So for me, I'd buy Ameer Abdullah. If I can get in this draft, if I can get something in, if I can pay like 202, 203, 204, for Ameer Abdullah, I'm doing that all day and just hoping for the best. Ridley doesn't worry me that much, you know, based on the injuries, based on his fumbling. I think he's more insurance. You know, now they have their four guys. They had four guys last year. Looks like they just want four running backs for whatever reason. And I think it's more of a threat to Zach Zenner's touches than it is Ameer Abdullah. So I would buy. I think this is another good opportunity for people to say, oh, well, now Ridley's over there. Maybe the Ameer Abdullah owner is going to undervalue him, so I'm going to go try to buy him for a mid-second. He's definitely not going for a first-round pick, so I think he's actually a pretty good buy.
All right, I like it. I like that knowledge, and we do have a question from the chat room here as we wrap up this first segment here. Wasp Guy wants to know about Max Williams, tight end from Baltimore. What do you think about his dynasty value? We all know how rookie tight ends usually struggle by and large. Williams comes into this coming season drafted as the number one tight end last year. He has a year of experience under his belt, and he's in Baltimore. What do you think about his role on that team and his dynasty prospects right now, Izzy?
Yeah, so interesting that Baltimore went out and got Mr. Watson. So Max was overdrafted both in dynasty and in the NFL because he was the best tight end out there. And once again, he's good at certain things. And I think a lot of the things that he's good at, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're learned or there's some things that he's discovered over time. He's just athletic for his size, right? He's that big guy, the prototypical look at him, you know, he can jump over defenders. I don't know if you remember that Minnesota game where, I think it was TCU where he hurdled that defender, and then that kind of like shot him up the draft boards.
Right.
That one play, just that one hurdle. And he's just the big guy that everybody wants to fall in love with. But with tight ends, they need a few years to really figure out the game. Tight ends are used completely differently in college than they are in the NFL. And with Max, I worry about the type of route runner he can become, and just the overall player. I don't think he's kind of like Michael Thomas. I don't think he's just a natural wide receiver. I don't know if Max Williams really is that natural guy. He just needs to work on the technique. He needs to work on his route running. He needs to work on the way he goes in and out of his breaks. It's just not – he doesn't sell his routes at all. And for me, tight ends are always the hardest for me to pin down because they're used so differently from team to team. And, you know, they need to be good blockers and the list goes on. But he needs to be more of that grinder type. I think he's kind of soft to kind of watch him play. He doesn't like the contact. Can he develop? Absolutely, because he got the physical tools. He just needs refinement, and that can come with time. But Max Williams is basically free. Like, nobody has any value built into Max Williams. So if you want to hold on to a guy and stash him deep on your roster, he's not a bad guy to do that for, because Ben Watson seems almost like a stopgap. Ben Watson's getting old. And Crockett Gilmore doesn't seem like he's a favorite of the Ravens. I think he's solid, but I think Max Williams is the guy. But you can get him for cheap. I just need him to improve as a football player before I want to invest any more than probably a late third, early fourth round pick on him.
Great stuff, Izzy. We're going to be we're going to take a short break here on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. We'll be right back after this with Izzy Elkafis from DynastyTradeCalculator.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. We are back on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. I'm Eric Balkman. Sitting in for Dave Gerzak tonight is Izzy Elkafis, the co-founder of DynastyTradeCalculator.com, contributor to Dynasty League Football as well. You can hear him on the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast, and of course follow him on Twitter at DLF_IzzyE. Let's talk a little bit about the news and notes that took place in the NFL this week, sort of the third wave of free agent signings, Izzy, and we're going to lead things off with the Green Bay Packers signing Jared Cook to a one-year, $2.75 million deal. He essentially, or ostensibly, I don't know if that's the case yet, but Richard Rodgers probably goes back to being the second tight end on this team behind Cook, at least for fantasy purposes. Aaron Rodgers, definitely the best quarterback that Jared Cook has ever played with in his career. JerMichael Finley was actually on a podcast earlier this week talking about the similarities that he shares with Jared Cook. Talk a little bit about, Izzy, talk a little bit about what you think Jared Cook will be for the Packers this year, and what you'd be willing to give up for him in dynasty leagues, if you want to acquire Jared Cook at all, that is.
Yeah, so Jared Cook has been a career underperformer. I think everybody's been kind of waiting for him to pop off, and he just hasn't been able to do it. But he's a guy that if you want to go buy him, you can still buy him, because I think – with Jared Cook, he's been around for so long, and he's upset so many people and let so many people down, that even with Cook signing with Green Bay, people aren't that excited. So he's a nice speculative buy low, because Aaron Rodgers. These top quarterbacks make players better than they are. So even if Jared Cook deep down inside actually has this immense talent that, you know, Tennessee and St. Louis wasn't able to uncover because of their poor quarterback play, Aaron Rodgers will get that out. So just that alone is worth buying him, because he's got the physical tools to do it. But Richard Rodgers, like you mentioned, he's probably going to be that secondary guy, probably use more of as a blocker. And Jared Cook's going to be running routes. I don't think there's any question about that. So he's a good buy low as well, because you can probably get him for a mid-third. I haven't even thought about acquiring Jared Cook yet, just because there's so many guys that I want to buy first before I go after a guy like Jared Cook. And he's been relatively healthy his career too, so it's hard to find the tight end that stays healthy and has that upside. He just needs to catch passes too. I mean, he drops a lot of balls. I haven't looked at his numbers from last year, but I know that his hands historically have not been very good.
Yeah, that's usually a problem, especially when you're catching. You're essentially going to be getting a lot of looks from Aaron Rodgers, given what we saw from Mike McCarthy at the NFC coaches breakfast earlier this week, where McCarthy was, I mean, just falling all over himself, talking about how the Packers really need big players running down the field. This is before they signed Cook. And then he sort of just kind of weirdly stopped talking about it. I thought, well, that was kind of strange that he was acting like that. And then sure enough, a few days later, Jared Cook is a Green Bay Packer. So, but he needs to catch the football. Let's move on to Kansas City, Izzy, and talk about the two running backs that they extended this week. And that was Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West. And according to Bleacher Report's Jason Cole, the Chiefs are working to trade former Jamal Charles handcuff running back Nile Davis. Of course, he's being linked to Miami because essentially every running back is being linked to Miami right now. So Charcandrick West and Spencer Ware, it looks like they are going to be the two backups to Jamal Charles once again in 2016. I don't know how you stand on the aspect of dynasty handcuffs, but if you were a believer in them and you own Jamal Charles, who are you targeting here? Are you trying to get West? Are you trying to get Ware? Are you ignoring it because neither guy is going to have the type of value that you need on a week-to-week basis to start, since they'll be, you know, essentially sharing the role? Are you trying to get both of them if possible? What's your opinion on the Jamal Charles handcuff for 2016?
Yeah, so I'll only draft handcuffs or only acquire handcuffs if, A, there's only one of them, and B, I think that handcuff can be the next guy in line. And a guy, for example, a guy that I think could be the next guy in line based on his development from year one to year two is Jerick McKinnon in Minnesota. I'm not a homer whatsoever. I'm from Minnesota, but I'm the last homer there is. But I really like Jerick McKinnon's growth. So those are the types of guys that I want to target. When you look at West and Ware, let's say Jamal Charles, let's say hypothetically, let's say he gets cut. Neither of them are really going to carry the RB1 value. They're both run-of-the-mill type of players. So in terms of running backs, those type of guys are the ones that are the easiest to replace, and they lose the value the quickest. And trying to figure out who's going to get the touches, when and where, no pun intended, it's just a headache that I'm trying to avoid. So I think Ware probably has the more, you know, West is going to catch. Man, it's tough with those two. But it's tough. It really is, because you don't know how they're going to be used. It was so inconsistent last year. And with Jamal Charles there, it doesn't even cross my mind to target either one of them. So I ignore them both. If I'm a Jamal Charles owner, I put my faith in Jamal Charles. And if I'm an owner of KC, I actually target a different handcuff that I think could take a job from somebody else, maybe like an injury-prone running back, over a guy like West and Ware, that even if Jamal Charles gets hurt, they're splitting time. It just doesn't make sense from an acquisition perspective, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. It's something I've heard from many high-stakes players on the show before, you know, talking about how they don't necessarily, I mean, they'll target handcuffs, but not necessarily the ones they need. They just look for the handcuffs that fit two criteria. One are playing behind a guy who has had injury issues, or he's getting up there in age, you know, they're playing behind a guy who is showing signs that he could be a player that misses time. And two, that they're halfway decent, you know, that they're not just, you know, like a Matt Asiata type, although that guy showed that he had some value with all those touchdowns he scored 2 years ago. But I think McKinnon is spot on, Izzy, and when I ask players that, McKinnon, about handcuffs that they're targeting, even for redraft purposes, McKinnon's a name that just keeps getting mentioned more and more, especially with Peterson, you know, not being in his 20s anymore. I think that's something that people are going to be beating that drum until it actually happens. Let's talk about a younger guy than Adrian Peterson in Clive Walford, the tight end for the Raiders. Adam Kaplan of ESPN saying that the Raiders say they want to expand his role going forward. Izzy, you already talked about how good that Oakland offensive line is at the top of the show. They obviously have Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree as the number one and two receivers on the team. Doing the work in the middle of the field could be the tight end from Miami, Clive Walford. What do you think about – I mean, to me, I don't hear a whole lot of people talking about him, and I feel like in the FFPC where you do get that point and a half per catch for tight ends, he's the type of guy that I'd be looking – I'd be putting the feelers out to see what it would take to acquire him right now.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. He's got the he's coming from the right place, Miami, right? The U. They've produced some quality tight ends over the years, you know, Greg Olsen, Jeremy Shockey, Kellen Winslow. And you look at a guy like Clive Wolford, and I don't really know why he's being ignored. The fact that they want to get him involved tells me a couple things. One, they're not going to be addressing the tight end position, most likely in the draft, because I don't think there's anybody that really would threaten him that they're willing to take. Two, they're not going to likely bring in another receiver from the draft because they got Seth Roberts and they're comfortable with Crabtree and, of course, Amari Cooper. And the biggest thing for his value is the fact that their offensive line is so damn good is that he now can focus on probably just running routes. He's probably going to be a guy that breaks off more into routes than he is going to be sitting in to block and protect, you know, the quarterback. They have the guys there where he can now actually run routes and catch passes as opposed to sitting back. So, for me, I like Clive. If you look at last year's draft, and I'm not 100% sure on this, I'd have to check, but I believe he had the fastest 40 and the best vert, for sure, those two. And I think he had another – I remember looking at Clive's combine numbers, and he might have been – the top in like the shuttle or the broad jump, one of the two, but he's got the athleticism. So he's got the athleticism. He's just a solid player. He blocks well, even though he doesn't have to, but he's going to be on the field in both situations. And he's just a natural, he looks like a natural receiver of the ball. He's got decent wiggle. When he catches the ball, he's not just this big oaf. He kind of has some athleticism to him. Other than that, I like him, and he's always been overlooked. He was overlooked in the NFL draft, and I'm not 100% sure why. I think he's a great buy. Seems like all we're talking about right now is buys, but I guess I just go out and buy everybody that we've talked about so far because we really haven't mentioned anybody that I would sell outside of DGB, I guess. Oh, I guess Latavius Murray. But, yeah, target Clive, and he's cheap. Nobody's on the radar. Even guys that own Clive are actively trying to sell him.
Well, okay, we might be getting into a sell here with this next story. Again, we'll find out your opinion on these one former Washington running back, one current Washington running back. But Jay Gruden this week said that they let Alfred Morris go to the Cowboys, division rival. Not that they traded him to him, he just signed with Dallas. But they're very excited about Matt Jones. Apparently he's going to get the first shot at being the starting running back for Washington this year. Jones, if you remember last year, had some explosive plays, but he also fumbled the ball. He got hurt. He's a guy that, to me, I have questions about him being a three-down guy, a guy that you can really count on him carrying the mail for a 16-game season. I'm sure Washington's going to add somebody, probably not through free agents anymore, but probably somebody through the draft. But talk a little bit about both those guys, Izzy, both Alfred Morris now in Dallas and his value, and Matt Jones as the, you know, de facto number one running back in Washington right now.
Yeah, so we'll start with Alf. So Alf, you know, this was the best landing spot for his dynasty owners to see, because especially the ones that are trying to get rid of him. There's a 24-hour window where you had a chance to sell Alfred Morris, because it was like the honeymoon phase where everybody saw it happen, like, oh my God, Alfred Morris, Dallas Cowboys, he's going to rush for 2,000 yards, he's going to score 30 touchdowns, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, and, you know, there it goes on and on and on. For me, it doesn't move the needle whatsoever. He's never been a guy that you have out there all three downs. Darren McFadden is arguably better if he stays healthy. So for me, I think Alfred Morris probably totes the ball 30% of the time. He's going to be the short yardage guy. He might be the hammer. He's going to be a goal line back. but he doesn't move the needle whatsoever in Dallas. I would be actively selling him for anything between anything from a first-round pick to an early second-round pick. If you're talking like the 20, the 210, 211, 212, especially in this draft, I would hold. But I would trade Alfred Morris for a 2017 second without a doubt because I think that draft is pretty stacked. So that's my take on Alf. In terms of Matt Jones, I like Matt Jones. So he, for me, is a buy because nobody is actually talking about him. So I kind of base all of my information off of Twitter. Nobody's talking about Matt Jones. Everybody's moving around in the NFL. Alfred's gone, and Washington does not get a single link to any of the free agent running backs. Nobody. I think they're comfortable with Chris Thompson being there as a pass catcher. So if they don't want to play Matt Jones on all three downs, they have Chris Thompson there, who, by the way, I think is a nice buy, especially if they don't bring anybody in the draft. I don't think they target anybody early in this draft. They might take a flyer on a couple, maybe a pick or two late, and bring in a guy from like a free agent running back to see if he can stick on the roster. But two things that stand out. The fact that they said that Washington said that they're taking a risk. So when a team says that they're taking a gamble on a guy, that's not necessarily a vote of confidence, but it's basically saying, we like this guy, and we're going to take a chance that he's going to be good enough to be our workhorse. And another big testament is when dynasty owners look at this is always pay attention to where guys are supposed to get drafted and where they actually get drafted. So Matt Jones was looked at as a sixth-round pick last year, and he got drafted in the third round. And I think it was the late third round. So he got drafted late. So let's call him a fourth rounder. But the fact that the Redskins did not want to miss out on him and they were willing to draft him 2 to 3 rounds earlier than his expected draft position says a lot. It says that they wanted to make sure that they didn't lose out on him. They're going to jump 2 rounds worth of value to get Matt Jones. And that's all you need to know about how they feel about Matt Jones moving forward. So, excuse me. For me, he's a buy. He's being sold for second-round picks. Easy buy, just because of opportunity. And you know he's got the athletic build to break off big runs. He can catch the ball. And once people see, you know, the big 50-yard run and they see this 6'2", you know, 230-pound running back, that's it. You're sold. And you can now flip him for a first-round pick if you don't like him. So Matt Jones is an easy buy in the second round.
I apologize for that. Izzy, are you back?
I am back.
Okay. I think we're recording right now. I do not know what happened. I had no idea what happened, but all of a sudden the computer I was recording on just completely it died on me. I don't know what happened. So anyway, we will continue. Oh, I'm assuming that everybody can still hear the show. We may not get to as many Dynasty trades as we had intended on, but we're going to get to those in just a little bit. Izzy, finish your thought on Matt Jones and why you like him
so
much.
Well, yeah, so where did I cut off? Did I cut off right away?
Well, I heard that you liked him and that nobody was really talking about him right now.
Oh, yeah, so nobody's really talking about him on Twitter, and I was highlighting the point that because I was still talking, I didn't even know I got cut off, so I was being that guy. But late third-round pick, so the Redskins drafted him in the third round, and he was actually projected to be a sixth-round pick. So the fact that they were willing to move up 3 rounds to draft their guy because they didn't want somebody else to take him is the vote of confidence that's all you need to know. There was no coaching change, no coordinator change. The fact that everybody's still there that drafted Matt Jones that high, knowing that they didn't want somebody to take him, they're willing to give up 3 rounds of value to get him, says a lot. And that's a big thing that you should look for, especially, you know, at the skill position players as a dynasty owner. Always look at where teams draft a guy versus where he's supposed to get drafted, because that just shows the investment and the I guess the love and the enamorment they have with the player. And the fact that Gruden, I don't know if I got cut off when I said this, but Gruden went out and said, we're taking a gamble. So it wasn't a fluff piece where they're saying, this guy's amazing, he's the next best thing. They said, we know we're taking a gamble, and they're just hoping it pays off. So those are two things that I hang my hat on. And Matt Jones is going for second-round picks right now. Based on value, that's an absolute steal for Matt Jones. And by Chris Thompson as well, because I like Chris Thompson as being that that pass catcher there.
Chris Thompson is a buy. Matt Jones is a buy. Good stuff on that, Izzy. Let's get to what I think is probably going to be the most compelling part of the show here, and we'll get to as many of these as possible, and that's the Dynasty trade evaluation that we have. Now, I have a bunch of FFPC trades that went down. I don't have all of them, but I have a ton of them that went down this past week. We're not going to say, because a lot of the players listen to the show, we're not going to say who made these trades, but we will say what they were, and I guess we'll kick things off with the first one on here. Marvin Jones and this year's 207 got traded for 2 second-rounders in 2017. Now, Marvin Jones no longer a Cincinnati Bengal. He is going to be playing for the Detroit Lions. What do you make of this trade, Izzy? The 207 and Marvin for 2 2017 seconds.
Yeah, this is interesting. So the 2 2017 seconds, regardless of where they land, is better than the 207. The Marvin Jones take is interesting because Marvin Jones could have a good first few weeks and he's going to get pumped in value. Like, you can get a first round pick for Marvin. You might be able to get a first round pick for Marvin Jones now, probably like a late first. So in that case, the 2017 seconds aren't going to change value. Like, they're always going to have the same value, but the 207, if you draft a player and he ends up hitting, like, you can get a Jonathan Williams at 207 or a Tajay Sharpe, and that player ends up doing well, that value goes up. And Marvin Jones, same thing. His value can go up. Now, his value can go down, of course, but odds are, based on the offense, based on the role that he's going to have, he's probably going to be a value increase from here moving forward. So I would side with the Marvin Jones 207 because I always know that the 2017 seconds are going to hold the same value. And in fact, every year, draft picks for the next upcoming class actually lose value during the season because teams give up picks to gain assets to try to make a run. So there is some devaluation there. So I side with Marvin Jones in 207.
Question from the chat room. Mint Montana wants to know, as long as we're talking about Marvin Jones here, he wants to know what your thoughts are on Mohamed Sanu as far as not only just 2016, how he does in Atlanta, but his dynasty value as well.
Yeah, so interesting enough, Leonard Hankerson and Roddy White were kind of sharing the duties there before Sanu, and I believe the targets went Julio Jones by a large margin, then Devontae Freeman, then Jacob Tammy, and then the duo of Roddy and Hankerson combined. That offense is going to pepper their top wide receiver. That's just how Shanahan does things. So he's going to get all the targets. That's not going to change with Sanu there. And then they throw to their backs a lot. So Devontae Freeman is going to be probably the second most targeted player on that team, which leaves Sanu as, best case scenario, the third recipient of targets there. I'm not a huge fan of Sanu. I think he's a decent player. However, everybody's kind of excited about Sanu being the second guy. I would wait for Sanu kind of in training camp when they're probably not going to draft a wide receiver. Wait for training camp to roll around. People get excited. And then before the season actually starts and people notice that he's probably not going to get the targets required to be a really good player, I would try to sell him at that point.
One of the other trades, good stuff on Sanu there, Izzy. One of the other trades I think that caught my eye is this Josh Gordon one. He was recently flipped. Again, we don't know if he's been reinstated. Well, we know he hasn't been reinstated yet. We don't know if he's going to be reinstated by the NFL. But an owner traded Josh Gordon and the 403 for next year's third-round pick. Josh Gordon, the 403, and next year's third rounder for C.J. Anderson. So you get the proven commodity in Anderson, but you get the unknowns of the draft picks in Josh Gordon. What's your take on that trade?
Oh yeah. See, I'm the wrong guy to ask for this because I love Josh Gordon, and I'm willing to take a chance because the way I look at it is his upside worth the risk? And for me, it's a yes. Like, we've already seen him play. He's an elite player. It's worth the risk. It's different than a guy like Martavis Bryant, who I don't feel is worth the risk. So Josh Gordon, even though he's being mentored by Johnny Manziel, it seems, which is probably the last mentor you want, but I don't know what he's doing. I don't think he really gives a damn, but he's a guy that I'm willing to take the chance on. And C.J. Anderson, that he's going to have a good role for the next couple of years just based on his contract and the way it's set up, and Denver really took a chance on him here with his contract. But I'm going to roll the dice with Josh Gordon in this one. It could burn you, but the upside is there, and you can replace a guy like C.J. Anderson. It's easier to find running backs that can produce for you, and it's hard to find guys that can be top five wide receivers, and that's where the value really is in most of the PPR, and C.J. Anderson isn't a huge PPR guy anyway. So I side with Gordon on that one.
Izzy Alkafas, the Dynasty Trade Calculator co-founder, giving his opinion on real-life FFPC Dynasty trades that were done in the past week. Speaking of a top-five receiver for the better part of a decade, almost a full decade, Calvin Johnson retired, but that's not stopping him from being traded for in some Dynasty leagues. If you look at on this list, we have Calvin Johnson being swapped for next year's seventh-round pick for a team, and then also swapped this year for a sixth-round pick. You're not risking a ton with it, with those sixth and seventh round picks in the FFPC Dynasty. You're hoping that Calvin comes back, I guess. But for me, Izzy, and I don't know how you fall on this, I think he is done. I think he's ready to walk away from the game. I don't think I would give up those picks for Calvin Johnson right now. What's your opinion on trading for him in Dynasty?
Yeah, so I look at this from a percentage standpoint. So what are the odds that a seventh round pick is going to be a valuable asset for you at any point in time? Probably less than 2%. We're looking at 1-2% chance. You got to hit a diamond in the rough. What are the odds that Calvin Johnson plays football again? I think it's more than 1-2%. So I would side with Calvin Johnson. And not only that, but that 1-2% for the guy that hits probably isn't going to be Calvin Johnson unless you get extremely lucky. So when it's that late, those are such huge dart throws that I would probably side with Calvin Johnson. But then again, if you are on the side of there is literally no chance Calvin Johnson comes back and you're pretty confident that he's not going to, sure, take the picks. But I think there's more than a 1% chance that he comes back, and that's all I need to trade him for a seventh-round pick or even a sixth-round pick. Now, when we get into the fourth round, I think that's where the cutoff is. I'd rather have a fourth-rounder. Fifth, I'd flip a coin probably.
Tevin Coleman and next year's first round pick for this year's three picks right in a row, the 111, the 112, and the 201. Where are you falling on that deal with Coleman in the future first for two late firsts and an early second this year?
So if that 2017 first is a bad team, a rebuilding team, I would take that side, the Tevin Coleman and the 2017 first, if I think it's going to fall between the 101 and the 104, 105. If I think it's a late first-round pick next year, I would rather have the 111, 112, 201, because all you need to do is have one or two of those assets to hit, and you can flip those guys for 2017 first next year, most likely. So if it's a bad team, I'll take the 2017 first. If it's a good roster, I'll take the trio picks.
And we have to say this too, like when we look at these trades, or at least when I look at them, I don't look at, you know, where the teams are in the standings, if they're rebuilding, if they're dominant or anything like that. So what I'm asking Izzy, and this is more of like a, you know, something for the listeners, what I'm asking Izzy these trades, he doesn't know either. So we're kind of looking at these in sort of a vacuum as far as, you know, who's getting the better deal, and we'll offer as many qualifiers as we can when we're looking at these. The next one I wanted to get your opinion on, this only involves one pick, so it's more player-oriented, but Jeremy Maclin and the final pick of the second round this year in exchange for John Brown and Duke Johnson. What side would you rather have in that trade, Izzy?
Wow, that's actually a really good trade. I would side with the John Brown side, just because Macklin kind of seems like he's peaked in terms of his value. No matter what Macklin does, people aren't going to fall back in love with him. He's getting older, and that ship has kind of sailed in terms of the enamorment. But with John Brown, if he takes over as the main weapon there, and Carson Palmer really likes John Brown, you could see him being shipped for a lot. Like, his value goes up exponentially. So, and same thing with Duke Johnson. Hugh Jackson loves targeting his back, and that's Duke Johnson all day. Isaiah Crowell isn't going to threaten him for reception. So I side with that because there's way more upside. But if you're – yeah, no, actually, there's no qualifier for this one. The more I think about it, I think it's John Brown's side. Actually, I'll take my comment back. I don't think it's close. I think John Brown is a better offer.
I love it. It's fantastic. We have time to look at two more here, Izzy. Another one involving just players. A recent FFPC Dynasty owner swapped Deion Lewis, the recovering Deion Lewis, in exchange for the new Patriots tight end Martellus Bennett and the underachieving Nelson Aguilar. So Bennett and Aguilar for Deion Lewis. In a vacuum, which side would you rather be on?
I'll take the Aguilar side. I'll take my chance that he can develop into a player because 2014 and 2015, or actually, yeah, in 2015, I guess. Not really 2015, but 2014. Ever since then, receivers don't have any chance to develop. Like, if you don't perform in your first year, you're not good. And before 2014, it used to be the rule of three. You give them 3 years. That's out the window. So you can take advantage of that while guys need to develop. Because Nelson, if you remember, like I said earlier, he started playing wide receiver in college. So he's still got time to develop as a player. And I just don't think the way he was utilized last year was very good. So give me Nelson. I don't like Belichick running backs. There's like 25 guys every season in that backfield. Just keep rotating them in a revolving door. So I'll take Nelson pretty comfortably on this one.
Final one I'm going to ask you. Dante Moncrief was swapped in exchange for Breshad Perriman and the 112. So final pick in the first round plus Perriman in exchange for Dante Moncrief. Which side would you rather be on, Izzy?
Yeah, so I think the value, this is a huge value for Moncrief. I think Breshad and the 112 is the better value. I think you can break up those two pieces a lot easier. And with Trestman, if Breshad Perriman is healthy, and Trestman uses him as his deep threat, which he will. I think that's a huge potential right there for a big value gain. So give me Perriman's upside with Trestman and the pick on that side.
I love it. Fantastic analysis on all those trades, Izzy. I know it's tough when you don't have it in front of you and you're not really looking at where all the teams are coming from and what their motivation was. But hopefully, I think at a minimum, what you did was give a lot of the players out there a template of what they should be looking for in potential trades that they'll be doing over the next month and then even after the NFL draft and sort of jockeying for position and how player values change. That's the great thing about Dynasty is everything's always in motion. So hopefully you gave them some thoughts on that tonight. And before we let you go, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about DynastyTradeCalculator.com, what you have going on over there, if you have anything in the works with Dynasty League football, and when can players check out the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcast? How do they get access to that as well?
Yeah, so we're on iTunes, so the podcast is on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud, Podomatic right now. It's on our website. Just go to our website, DynastyTradeCalculator.com. You can hop on it there. We have articles. We got a rankings page. We have our calculator, which is kind of our draw. And it's really easy to use. Like I said, we update it often, and it's something that we spent a lot of time on. I promise it's the best calculator that we have. We've checked them all out. We've had unbiased individuals check out the calculators that are out there, and it's awesome. Now, it's not the end-all, be-all. There's, you know, you have other ways to evaluate trades, but it's a great start. So that's that. And for DLF, I got a lot of stuff pending, a lot of stuff in the works. My biggest plan here starting this offseason after this NFL draft, the rookie draft for our league, is I'm doing a dynasty case study. So I'm going to start an article series where I give teams an update of what I'm doing with one of my teams that I orphaned, that I took over as an orphan last year. So that's kind of my biggest plan for this upcoming season. So a lot of big stuff, and I'm always on Twitter, and I have a good time. So if you guys want to follow me, send me a message. I'll talk to anybody as long as it's a good conversation. I don't care if you, I think a lot of people have get enamored with the amount of followers that somebody has. But if you have one follower, I'll still chat with you. Don't worry.
Oh, perfect. I appreciate that because, listen, my Twitter numbers just continue to dwindle by the day. I'm going to have negative Twitter followers probably in the next couple of weeks. So it's always good to know that I can chat with you on there.
You can count on me.
You can, yeah, exactly. You can follow Izzy on Twitter at DLF underscore Izzy E. That's DLF underscore IZZYE. You can follow the Dynasty Trade Calculator on Twitter at FF Dynasty Trades. Of course, Dynasty League Football on Twitter at DLF Football, DL Football. And then check out DynastyTradeCalculator.com. It's an easy to navigate website. The podcast link is pretty easy to see on there. You can play around with the calculator. I would encourage all FFPC owners before they make that Dynasty trade to go on there, bounce it through the calculator, and then bounce it off Izzy on Twitter and get his opinion on that. I certainly appreciate you coming on tonight, my friend. This was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I know the listeners did as well. It was awesome having you. I wish you best of luck in all your dynasty leagues this year. But listen, we all know it comes down to trading in the draft, which is always going on. So best of luck to you in that arena right now. We'll continue to read your stuff, listen to your podcast, and follow you on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Izzy.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. It's been an honor.
Izzy Elkafis, ladies and gentlemen, co-founder of the DynastyTradeCalculator.com. Follow him on Twitter at DLF underscore Izzy E. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, our show comes to a close tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. It was Dave free, so that's always the best part of the show for me. So that was awesome. I want to thank Izzy Elkafis for coming on. I want to thank FFPC, Rob, our mutual friend and producer, our audio engineer, Bryce, and, of course, all of you listeners that hung on through the technical difficulties that we had tonight. I do apologize for that. I think this is all going to be played back when you download it. So if it's not, it was great for the people who listened to it live. Anyway, we will be back next week, ladies and gentlemen. Dave will be back in the studio, so you can listen to him. Our Season 5 premiere comes out next Friday, and we'll be with a heavy hitter, 2015 FFPC Dynasty 500 number 20 league champ, and longtime listener of the show, one of my favorite people, BipLab Mando, will be on the show with Dave. Remember, go to sbfsta.org, register for an account, support us any way that you can. Keep fantasy football fun and legal, and fight the duopoly. Play the FFPC satellites and DEs today.
This has been another episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour, presented by MyFFPC.com, that was broadcast live and heard around the world. Eric and Dave will be back next week with more analysis, interviews, and advice from a guest much smarter than they are. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you again next week.
You don't stop, KRS-One, the horn! Yes, yes, y'all, you don't stop, KRS-One, the horn! I'm about to hit you with that traditional style of co-rocking, giving options for head knocking on...
Easter egg, because I know my daughter is listening. She turned 1 year old today. Very exciting. I'm a proud dad. Happy birthday, Emma. I love you. And we'll talk to everybody else next week.